You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 6 May. Redefine results due within the hour. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nkunzo from Sanlam Private Wealth, the Netcare trading update, and US jobs, slightly disappointing. Are we back to what? Bad news is good news for rate cuts. Alex DeWitt from Cliff Decker Hofmeyr, protecting yourself in a booming rental market. Renee Swanepoel from Morningstar South Africa, the insane power of compounding. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Dubai Tradeport Trade Zone 2 gets 1.8 billion rand in new investment. Special Economic Zone has drawn 4.6 billion in total investment since its launch and created more than 5,000 jobs. News 24, could SA Inc. stocks be in store for a post-election relief rally? 91 portfolio manager John Picard says it'll be a 15% relief rally and stocks highly correlated with the local economy after the election. However, Coronation CIO says he sees no tangible signs of change in key drivers of long-term economic outcomes. Morning markets, the US is green. S&P was up 1.25% on Friday. NASDAQ up 2%. Over in the East, it's mixed. We've got Sydney up 0.25%. We've got Tokyo closed again, this time Children's Day. Hong Kong is off 0.1% and Tencent up 0.8%. Commodities also mixed. Gold, 2,320. Brent is a little weaker at 83.14. Platinum a little weaker at 9.59. Palladium green at 9.46. Rand 18.53, Bitcoin 63,900, and top 40 opening call, modest open, looking for about 30 points to the green. That is a fraction of a percent.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Trading now with Nkunzo, Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning. The Netcare result, and if we contrast it with Life, which the market really didn't like, the Netcare number got the market a little bit interested. But I mean, our healthcare stocks, I mean, looking at the 5-year charts, man, Netcare's down at 5-year lows, which includes the pandemic lows.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Yeah, difficult to get overly excited with those results. As you said, they just, I guess they were okay and not as bad as the Life ones. But still, I mean, when you're growing your business at, what was it, 4.4%, that was expected, you know, in a country with inflation, you know, teaching around about north of 5, you know, you're not even outperforming inflation, unfortunately. And there's a lot of headwinds in that industry as well. You know, we all know the saga with the NHR bill coming, and I guess a little bit of relief was load shedding didn't knock it as much as if things get a little bit better. But, you know, the coming sort of good news, everyone was talking about elective surgeries coming back after COVID. But as you pointed out in your intro, we're back at those lows. That hasn't come to fruition. So difficult to get excited about the result. I guess the good thing was it just wasn't as bad as some people might have thought. A little bit of a pop in the share price.
Yeah, I take your point. I suppose it could have been worse, but in an inflationary environment, certainly not thrilling. Friday saw jobs data out of the US. It saw unemployment, jobs data disappointed, just still 175,000 jobs. I mean, give us that for any disappointment. Unemployment up to 3.9. Not the greatest data set. The market likes it because I suppose that says it gives Jerome Powell space for rate cuts.
It does, it does. And you know, and markets are forward sort of discounting mechanisms, and the markets have been, you know, they've certainly changed their tune over the last few months. You've gone from the start of the year at, you know, 6-odd rate cuts, and now market pricing and possibly 1, maybe 2, at least until after the November elections. So this was reasonably well received. I guess for Mr. Powell, this was relatively good news. You know, he's been certainly quite vocal about the, you know, sort of unemployment rate needs to lessen a little bit to at least get the idea of cutting rates. I just don't see how they can cut rates, though, with, you know, with the economy as strong as it is. But I guess this is a little bit of a step in the right direction. But as you said, still, you know, 175,000 jobs created just in the month of April. You know, this year's economy is very resilient and very strong.
Yeah, I mean, well below expectations, but still a very chunky number. Quick last point, and I mentioned in the intro there, we've got 91 saying that things could really see a good rally post-election. We've got Coronation, not so sure. Where do you sit? I was looking at some of the retailers. I mean, Mr. Price really strong, but we've seen a bit of a rally in the last 2 weeks, albeit off massively low levels.
Yeah, I think at some point, you know, valuation comes in. You know, as you saw, I actually saw a tweet of yours, Mr. Price. You know, they're actually looking quite good technically. You know, I guess at some point, you know, we're trading on single digit P's. You know, we are the lowest and the cheapest in the emerging market basket. And at some point, you know, value investors come in. I mean, Mr. Picard, which you pointed out, he's well known for that. Just a word of warning, though. And for, you know, we are, you know, not really a big number in that basket anymore. We've gone from, you know, 17-18% of the MSCI emerging market basket sort of 2 decades ago. We're teaching around 2-2.5%. So not a big number, but I guess for local investors, there is value out there. But for macro investors, I don't think we really move the needle, unfortunately.
Yeah, I take your point. And of course, I mean, the election is still 3 and a bit weeks away. A lot is still happening between now and then. Nick Kunze, Sanlam Private Wealth. Always appreciate the early morning insights.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. But what if you don't have to feel it? Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. So when you invest in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the ups and downs caused by market fluctuations. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Alex DeVette. He is Director of Real Estate at Cliff Decker Hofmeyr. Alex, appreciate the early morning time. I want to talk around legalities around landlords and tenants and rental agreements. But before we do, I mean, a note that you recently put out makes the point that local renting market locally is absolutely booming. In part, that is high rates turn people into renters, but also in some senses a bit of a mindset shift in terms of convenience and flexibility from tenants who are actually preferring the rental space rather than owning.
Oh, good morning, Simon. You absolutely correct. You know, at the present moment with the high interest rates, and let's also link it to sort of inflation. I think that the property market especially is a bit under pressure, on the basis that I think people are opting more to look at the rental space instead of purchasing property because of the fact that you can save a fair amount of money by renting property instead of purchasing it. So yes, there is definitely a shift in that regard.
And as soon as we're renting, we now have to have a lease in place, which is different to, I mean, you do an offer to purchase. There's an offer to purchase, you do the purchase, then it's kind of concluded. What is the sort of regulatory environment locally that governs landlords and, of course, tenants as well within South Africa around leases?
Yeah, well, look, yes, as you correctly point out, it is a bit of a different avenue to deal with property. The rental market is regulated relatively highly. There's numerous pieces of legislation that deal with rental accommodation, but probably the most prominent one is the Rental Housing Act, and as it was amended quite recently, and the Consumer Protection Act, which sort of provides a lot of protection for specifically tenants and sort of obligations on the landlords as well.
And what are, I mean, some of the mistakes that are made? I mean, there's a regulatory environment, and of course, as far as possible, we hope and assume that landlords and tenants are operating within that regulatory environment. But what are some of the mistakes that you see between landlords and tenants when they enter an agreement?
Simon, to be honest, I think the biggest mistake that the parties do make is not necessarily understanding what their rights and obligations are that emanate out of the contract. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, having a sound contract is probably the biggest and most important issue, because it forms the foundation of the relationship between the two parties, and it regulates how they effectively implement that relationship. on the basis how the landlord, what he can expect from the tenant, and obviously vice versa, what the tenant can expect from the landlord, and especially in terms of the use and enjoyment of the property, which is at the end of the day the core element to the rental agreement.
I take your point, and first step is read that rental agreement, particularly if you are the tenant, and it's, you know, there's some legal in there, but it's certainly a document that is very much readable. Well, some key clauses that should be in there. I mean, it's things like, you know, landlords require access to the property, and that doesn't mean they can pop around for dinner on a Friday, but you know, they can certainly sort of inspect their asset in a sense. Are there other sort of key clauses that should be there that landlords and tenants should look out for?
Yeah, Simon, from my view, the sort of the most important clauses that the rental agreement must deal with is obviously we have to look at the finances. People must know when rental must be paid, deposits have to be paid, deposits have to be kept on an interest bearing account to the benefit of the tenant. And then obviously the main sort of further is what the tenant may do with the property. Because at the end of the day, renting a property is still a limited right towards the property, because the tenant doesn't have ownership and therefore doesn't have a full say on it. As you correctly pointed out, the landlord can come by and inspect his property, obviously on a basis that it must be prearranged. And then obviously I would be of the view that the most crucial element of the rental agreement would be the exit clause. In order for a tenant to be able to not be stuck in an agreement that they are not satisfied, and obviously that cuts both ways for the landlord as well. I know, you know, legislation like, for example, the Consumer Protection Act provides on fixed term contracts statutory notices and penalties if you terminate within the term, but at least the legislature has created an environment where the tenant has a bit more sort of shielding from the absolute, call it, guise of the tenant of the landlord.
No, I take your point. And I suppose, and as I said, I mean, key thing, read that agreement. It's not half as scary as you think. It's sometimes quite long. It could be many pages, but you know, it's not legalese that is completely beyond us. We'll leave it there. That's Alex DeVet. He's director, real estate, Cliff Decker Hofmeyr. Alex, appreciate the early morning time. And our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Talking rental there, do you rent or do you own your own home? Certainly, I think we're seeing a trend to renting, and some of it is cost, but I think some of it is just flexibility. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Renee Swanepoel, head of sales at Morningstar South Africa. Renee, appreciate the time today. In a recent note you put out, you used one of those mind games, which is, would you rather have R1,000 per day every day for 30 days or R1 that doubled in value every day for 30 days? I know the answer is take the R1 because it will double and create more wealth. I was staggered by how much difference it actually is, though.
Yeah. If you think about that R1, when I think about compound interest, I always ask everyone this question because it is such an astonishing answer if you think about it. But that R1 that doubles every day for 30 days, you'd have about R500 million at the end of those 30 days. And no one ever believes me, but you can try it on an Excel spreadsheet. You have 500 million at the end of 30 days. So it just shows you that power of compounding.
Yeah, as I said, I knew which was the right answer. I didn't realize how big the answer was. I admit, I checked, and it is right. That R1 becomes a 500 million, which is absolutely staggering.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And you think about, that's why they call compound interest the eighth wonder of the world.
It absolutely is. And it's also, and there's some nuances to it. I mean, we need to understand the power of compound interest as opposed to sort of, I think it's simple interest, they refer to it, which is, you know, when you earn that interest on the interest, which is what effectively what that doubling is doing. If I invest $100 at 10%, I get 10 rand this year. Next year, I get 11 rand because I'm earning on that free interest I received.
Exactly. And that is the basic principle of compounding, is interest on interest on interest. And that is, when you look at investments, that is essentially what you get. So that big, big power of compound interest with your investments. This year, you make exactly like you say, your 10 rand, then you've got 11 rand. And then it just, almost what I always call it, is the snowball effect of your investments.
It is that. And, you know, we've been talking sort of interest and the like here, but it is around investing. And it is, I remember starting with a small amount of money and watching it grow at incredibly slow pace. But it does start to sort of hockey stick, that snowball you talk about. And that is the real power. I always say to folks, no one knew who Warren Buffett was 20 years ago because he was only worth, you know, a billion or half a billion. And now suddenly it snowballs and now he's one of the richest in the world.
Exactly. And most of his wealth was actually accumulated later in his life. Sometimes a lot of investors think, why should I even start saving early if I've only got 100 rand a month? I should only start saving when I've got more to invest. But actually, it is all about, the earlier you start, the more you get that compound interest effect and that snowball effect. And that is, most of your time, the greatest amount of your wealth is made in those last few years, where that snowball really starts accelerating.
You know, you had an example, and again, it's one I'd seen before. Two investors, one invests from age 24 to 30, one invests from age 30 through to retirement. And the person who only invested for 6 years ends up with more money simply because they had started earlier. And what that 6 years gave them was a really chunky head start on investor B.
Yeah. If you think about investor A, and I always call in this example, investor A, your sensible investor, started early, 2000 Rand a year, puts away 2000 Rand a year for 6 years. And investor B really wanted to spend a little bit more and not really save early, but he started saving, which was good. He started saving his 2000 Rand per year at age 30, all the way through to his retirement. And if you think about both of those two and what they ended up with, there was about a 60,000 Rand difference and what they had to contribute.
Yeah. Again, staggering. Another one you put out there, which is a really fun one, is the rule of 72, which essentially helps you sort of do a quick mathematical understanding of how long it's going to take money to double in terms of its value.
Yeah. I love this tool. It's always a good tool to have in your toolbox if you think about compound interest, and it's very simple. So in essence, what you do is, if you've got an investment and you're earning, let's say, 10% a year on your investments, you take your 72 divided by your 10 and you get 7.2, which is effectively the amount of time in years that will take your investment to double. So it is quite staggering to think 10% per year, your investment's going to double in just about 7 years.
Yeah. Again, you think 10%, you think it's going to take forever. And it really is. And there's two core themes here, which, you know, as we said, are the sort of the core to that long-term investing. It is the compounding. In other words, leave the money. Don't be tempted to take it out. And then it's about that time. It's about that impact of time, and particularly towards the end, which becomes so hugely important.
Yeah. And if you think about your investments, we always talk about long-term, but long-term is really when compounding takes its effect. And I think the one big lesson, and I think this is probably the biggest lesson if you think about compounding, is start as early as possible. Don't wait until you've got what you think is a good amount of money. Let compounding work in your favor. Start as early as possible.
Yeah, I ran the numbers once, my niece and nephew, a tax-free account from their day of birth to maxed out about 15 years. That's basically their retirement sorted when they get to retirement age. Not because it was any fancy growth, but because it was 60 years and that was the key secret.
Yeah. And you stuck it out in the markets. We get these, it's quite a wild ride in the markets at some points in time, but that really is sticking it out. You always are rewarded for time in the market. It's always that thing that everyone says, time in the market, not timing the market.
Yeah, but I like that. We're rewarded for time in the market. When markets get tough, just turn off the computer and stop watching. Renee Swanepoel, Head of Sales, Morningstar South Africa. Appreciate the insights.
That's it for today. We were chatting with Gary Boyson on Friday, he of course from Rand Swiss, talking about positioning his local portfolio ahead of the election. He's not doing very much different, although he is buying a lot of Rand hedges. And we asked how your portfolio is positioned. Almost half said nothing different. A third said moving everything offshore. The rest was split between moving to cash and, as Gary's doing a lot of, buying those Rand hedges. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us an excellent rating in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again tomorrow, Namibian Bonds.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.